Blog Talk Radio.
Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome back to the show Rick Snyder. Now, Rick has been a guest here before, and the last time he was here, we discussed decisive intuition in business. It was a terrific conversation, and I encourage you to go find it and listen to it as well. You know, it's kind of like reading a series of books. You have to read the first one to get really understand the second one. A lot of these conversations I have lead into something else, so go grab it. And today we are going to discuss going slow to go fast, the power of intuitive decision making. Rick Snyder is the founder and CEO of Invisible Edge, which is an international consulting firm that builds high-performance environments in major, mid-size, and emerging businesses. He leads the Invisible Edge coaches in training companies and teams to build intuitive skills. I'm trying not to cough, so if I'm hesitating, and translate them into business plans and company cultures that result in more effective communication, engagement, profitability, and innovative success. His breakthrough strategies based on the book that we talked about the last time he was here, Decisive Intuition, have been implemented by executives and businesses in Europe, Canada, Asia, Africa, and America. And today he's here to discuss, we have about five key points, how successful business leaders are integrating intuitive skills into their companies, for cutting-edge results, directional, social, and informational intuition, and how you can apply them to different areas of your business for greater results, a six-step process for harnessing your intuitive intelligence with practical business applications, five roadblocks to accessing your intuitive intelligence and how to overcome them, and the latest findings in neuroscience and techniques to access your intuitive subconscious mind for arriving at better decisions faster. Good morning, Rick. Welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning, Denise, and thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, listen, I'm delighted to have you back. By the way, I have your new book in front of me. And I have both of your books now. I feel like I'm gaining a little collection here. And thank you so much for sending it. And I smiled big when I read the inscription. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I'm glad you got it safely. And I look forward to this conversation.
Oh, me as well. And listen, just so our audience knows, you took time out of a book tour to be here. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's right. Right now I'm in California on book tour. I did a book talk last night in Berkeley. And then I'm going up to Oregon next, to Portland and to Ashland, Oregon. So we're doing our West Coast swing. So it's been a lot of fun to go across the nation and also in London as well and just get to bring this message out there to a lot of different kinds of corners of the world, and just getting to see the reception has been amazing.
I have to ask, how is it being received? Because it's one of those topics that you're either kind of all in or you're not. It's one of those things come on. Or you're like, oh, heck
right.
Yeah.
That's
I'm in the heck yeah category, just so you know.
Well, this is what's so great about what I'm passionate about, is bridging the conversation so that it's more approachable for everybody. And, for example, we were working in a corporate training maybe about a month ago, and it was a room full of very left-brain engineers who – at first, when they heard about, we're going to be talking about decisive intuition so that you can make better decisions in your role. And, you know, we definitely saw some raised eyebrows, which is what you would expect. But what's amazing is, you know, when we bring in the neurobiology, when we bring in the science of how intuition actually works and how we can access your subconscious for making faster decisions, and then actually giving them a process and having them walk through an experience where they're literally coming up with new ideas and innovations they've never had before. And when you get to see a room full of engineers go there, you know you can really do this with anyone.
True. I'm pretty left-brained. I mean, I obviously, you know, we all access both sides, and sometimes at the same time, which can make for some very messy stuff going on. But yeah, I tend to be predominantly left brain, and I find this absolutely fascinating. And I'll be honest with you, there's nothing about it that I don't get. I'm like, yep, makes perfect sense to me. But you're right, having the processes and having explained, other than having somebody, oh, wow, you know, just tap into your intuition, which I do all the time. I depend very heavily on my intuition. But it was something I had to kind of teach myself because it wasn't really being taught. And once I started doing it, I went, oh, now we're cooking with gas.
You know, that's a really good point, because I want to demystify it a bit, where so often we have that intuition is esoteric, or it's witchcraft, or it's some bizarre black magic out there, or some weird thing that we don't even know about. But what I'm here to say is actually it's the opposite. It's the most innate intelligence we all have. You know, we all came into this world with an inner sense that we're using all the time. And if you look at children, if you're around children at all, you'll see they have immediate access to their intuitive sense. Like, for example, if they get a weird feeling about someone coming over to the house, trust that. Like, you should be listening to your child. You know, if they're out in the in public and they're picking up on things all the time, we do that also, but we've been so overprogrammed with our mind and all of our media and our bombardment of information that we've kind of lost track with our deeper bodily intelligence and our wisdom that we still have access to.
I agree. I mean, I think we've put too many filters in place. And once you, you know, I mean, if you stop and you kind of filter through, what have I been taught? What do I believe? What don't I believe anymore? You've already been hit over the head by a mugger. Pay attention.
Yeah, right. That's right. So this is going to help you prevent that mugging, because you're going to get to anticipate that, you know, many steps before. You know, the two great things about intuition is it helps us read out what's happening in our environment in real time more accurately, and it also helps us anticipate the future. So if you can imagine,
really,
in a business context, that's amazing to have those two skills.
Yeah.
They're like two superpowers where you're getting to read out the meeting, or if you're doing a sales pitch in front of an audience and literally being able to tap into, you know, what's the vibe out here? Do I need to change my pitch based on the reaction I'm getting? And can I pivot in real time? Do I have that adaptability as a leader? Or if I'm trying to anticipate where the market's going, how do I actually tune into my own antenna and also use other people around me who are doing the same on my team so that we can actually make better strategic decisions? So this is where it gets really interesting. We're seeing amazing results in businesses who are willing to start to develop their intuitive skills for these purposes.
And that was going to be my next question. So, I mean, I know you work with a lot of businesses and you coach a lot of people. So what are you finding that successful business leaders are doing to integrate intuitive skills into their companies? I mean, how are they bringing it in? First, I would think that they would have to understand and master it themselves. And then they would have to, I'm just guessing, then they would have to seek those among their employees or their peer group that understand it and are willing to sit down and say, okay, this is what we've got. Now how do we move forward?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, and that was a wag. That was, you know what a wag is, right?
No, what's a wag?
It's a wild-ass guess. So that's what that was. Just so you know.
Well, I would say you and I, you nailed it. So you're right. The last chapter of the book pretty much gets into this around how do you make your company culture smarter. And the first part is exactly what you said, is leaders go first. That leaders have to be willing to give themselves permission to develop their own intuitive intelligence, to learn how to listen to that, to trust that, to decode your intuitive language, and to actually give yourself permission to use that in decision making, along with the data, along with the research, along with the analytics. So I'm not saying ignore all that. I'm saying include all of it. Why wouldn't you include all of the best resources that you have available? So when leaders go first, that's where they really give their team permission to do the same. You know, I was doing a talk in San Francisco on Monday with a company, and it's a great new company that has this amazing app around mindfulness that is really getting hot in the business space. And what's great about the company is they have a whole area in their office that has maybe 15 different meditation cushions for staff to be able to sit anytime and literally take a break from the computer and from their data crunching and all the stuff, the coding that they're doing, and literally get a little bit of that intuitive mindset and that reset that they need. And so what's great is the CEO is sitting in mindfulness about three times a day herself. And so when she's leading that way, it gives everyone on the team permission to do the same. So they're actually able to slow down, get away from their typical mindset, and be able to tackle a problem in a different way just by taking a 5 or 10 minute mindfulness break. And so just to see the CEO leading that really encourages that kind of approach for the rest of the team.
And see, that makes perfect sense. I mean, if they see that they're not chained to the desk, and so many workplaces are, my last job, which was and will forevermore be my last job, I skipped all the way down the stairs, whistled my way into my car. I couldn't get out of there quick enough. Trust me, I am unemployable. It's three components of unemployable. It was a miserable time. I was finishing up school, and I'd gone back to college to get a degree and was working during the day. And it was just one of those jobs where I felt like I was being, there was an itch at the back of my neck. I was being watched all the time. All of us were. You know, are you working? Are you playing solitaire on your computer? Yes, I am. You want to join? Yeah, there's nothing to do. I'm bored. I finished all my work 3 hours ago.
Right.
But when you get into that kind of situation, you talk about stifle everything except a murderous impulse. I had no intuition. I just wanted to kill someone. So, I mean,
you know,
and once
that,
I got
really
away
point.
From that, I know. I mean, it really does stifle you because you do feel oppressed. You do feel miserable. You are watching the clock. And it's hard to take a mindfulness break unless it's in the ladies' room. Seriously.
You know, right? That's so true. And that's actually one of the pieces we get into also in that last chapter is that if a leader is leading by the old school way of leading around intimidation and pressure that's not productive and those kind of things, you're not going to create a space where people feel like they're open and they're welcome and they belong and they're willing to take a risk and share that moonshot idea that might actually be the thing that changes your whole business. And so if you're not creating an environment where everyone's feedback is welcome in the appropriate channels, but you're actually creating a place where you actually do want to hear feedback, because a lot of leaders will say they want to hear feedback, but their body language is actually telling you they don't. You know, or other signals you're getting are telling you they're actually not open to that. And so this is where it's so important as a leader to really, or if you're a manager of a team, whatever position you're in, you know, to really check, am I really creating an environment where I'm allowing innovation to take place, and that can only happen when people feel safe enough and to share, and that they're not going to get shamed for an idea that's really outside the box. And so there's definitely times for brainstorming and creativity, and how much are you allowing that in your business culture is really going to be an indicator of the level of innovation that you're going to advance to.
I have to ask, in this day and age, I think people are far more open to it than they might have been when I first discovered it, which I'll tell you was quite a ways back. I've always been fairly intuitive and, you know, just I'm always kind of in tune, or most of the time I am in tune with what I'm thinking and what's going on around me. But I was aware of this a very long time ago, and I'm noticing it's picking up a lot of traction, and rightfully so. It's almost like we're going back to our roots. You know, when you mention children, you're right. I mean, if they're shrinking from an adult who's trying to hand them a piece of candy, grab that candy and run. I mean,
okay.
Seriously. So there are so many different things that we kind of need to go back to, but I think my question is, I've distracted myself there a bit by talking too much, is how is this kind of resounding back to you? Are people open to it, or once they hear the processes, like the engineers, are they, okay, that makes, or they're just like, no, that's woo-woo. What are you finding that is it trending in the direction that you think it ought to go, or are you meeting a lot of resistance, or just somewhere in the middle?
Actually, I'm impressed. I'm finding that people are embracing this very fast. And once again, once I usually feed the mind and bring in the science, bring in the neurobiology, which there's been a lot of research in the last 10 years specifically on the neurobiology of intuition and how it works. It's been amazing because that's a language everyone can really understand. And also when you start to think about our best scientists used intuition in their discoveries. It's part of the scientific method. If you actually look at the scientific method, one of the steps is hypothesis. And it's like, oh, I have a hunch we should try the light bulb this way, you know, says Thomas Edison after 990 attempts and still failing, right? But he still had this intuition that he was on the right track and he was getting closer and to stay with it and stay committed to his feeling of creating the light bulb. And so many of our greatest inventors like, you know, Albert Einstein and Nikola Tesla, even in the business world like Steve Jobs and Richard Branson and even Oprah Winfrey, the media mogul, all of them relied on their intuition to get into that innovative, creative space. And so when I bring in those kinds of realities of these change agents, people really perk up because they get that they probably haven't allowed themselves the permission to tap into that creative space, because so often we're just focused on the metrics only, that we lose track of the other ways that we're getting data. And so I'm impressed. I'm finding people are really taking to this. And my prediction is this, just like emotional intelligence, that book came out 25 years ago with Daniel Goleman, I predict that intuitive intelligence is really that next nuance of how we access our full potential.
And see, I love that because that does make complete sense to me. Look, I've met people, I'm related to people with very high IQs that couldn't open a paper bag without cutting their finger. I mean, some people just don't have, and, you know, they're not fun to be around, I'll be honest with you. But some people just don't have much in the way of emotional intelligence, which means how do you read a room, going back to what you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. How do you sit quietly and listen? How do you intuitively assess what the person next to you is really trying to say to you? Or how do you lead them to the point where they need to go, but they might be embarrassed or afraid or just don't know how to get it out? And sometimes you have to be empathetic enough and emotionally involved enough, intuitive enough to say, listen, is this what's really bothering you? You want to talk about this instead? Which a lot of times in my world means shut up and listen.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think you're spot on again, and that's exactly why I called my business in the Invisible Edge. And so we're literally giving people the Invisible Edge where they're able to read out the conversation that needs to happen in the meeting room or the nonverbal communication that your client is emitting, even though they're saying something, but they're actually communicating something else. And imagine if you're a salesperson or you're in customer service and you're able to actually track that. You're actually able to read that out of what their real underlying need is, not what they're telling you, but what their real need is. Imagine how valuable that is in all these different applications. So when we get to work with salespeople, it's a joy because we're teaching them a skill they've never learned in all their sales training about how to actually read out body language, how to read out energetics and emotions, and get at the underlying need of your prospect. And it's making an amazing difference. I think we're seeing about a 33% conversion rate increase for sales in about 4 months of training, which is really huge and a real differentiator for these kinds of sales teams.
You know, I think LinkedIn might be your big competition right now. I went on LinkedIn this morning, and they were trying to make me go to work. They were saying, we've got these jobs that you might be interested in. I'm like, no. All of them, without exception, were in sales. And I was offended. I really was. No. Absolutely not. But I understand what you're saying. Listen, I've come across some terrific salespeople who were not pushing. My spidey sense didn't go off. They knew what I needed to know. And they gave me the information, and they sat back and let me make my decision. I've also come across literally a used car salesman. I wanted to hit him. I actually had my fist in my lap, itching. I wanted to smack the guy. I left the room, just so you know. So give us some examples. I mean, I know you want people to read the book, and I definitely want people to read the book as well. But can you give us some quick examples that can let people know a bit more how this works?
Yeah, let's see. We could take so many different parts of the business. Let's take leadership and decision making, just for an example. So we have a lot of different processes where we actually help leaders take their user critical mind in making a decision and all the pros and cons, like a typical pro-con list. Let's say you're needing to here's an example. I worked with a business leader who had an office. They had their headquarters in Brooklyn, and they were thinking about moving to Manhattan. And so on paper, it sounded great in a lot of ways because Manhattan is the big, you know, it's the Big Apple. It's in the limelight, and they're in real estate. And so this would have made a really good move for them in certain ways. But I had my spidey sense was going off that they were making that choice for the wrong reasons. And between you and I, more about like ego and wanting to be in Manhattan for those reasons versus really making sense for their business and for where they were at in their business development. But what's great about this is they need to discover that themselves. It's not my job to just tell them right away, but have them actually walk through a process where they get to discover by tapping into their intuitive intelligence on what wants to happen next, what's actually in the best interest of the whole company and all the executive team and everyone involved and their clients also and their trading area. And so we got to walk through a whole process with the executive team where they did a normal pro-con list, but then we got them into their body, their heart intelligence, their gut intelligence. We have a whole process where we lead people through a somatic experience where they're literally including all these intelligent centers that we have available to us where intuition lives in our subconscious. And so getting to get them in that process, they were able themselves to get all the reasons why moving there was probably actually the wrong idea. And so we saved them a whole hassle of the move, all the expenses, and just the fact that we all could feel in the room eventually that it was coming from the wrong motive. And so those moments are really make or break in a business a lot of times where you might be choosing something, but it might be coming from the wrong motive that ends up, you know, biting you later if you don't catch it soon enough.
And that goes back to the processes, which you've mentioned a couple of times. And I, like you, I think they're very important. It's one thing to, you know, take an intuitive, you know, gut leap, if you will, and sometimes you absolutely must. But other times I think you have to sit down and say, okay, that idea dropped into my head for a reason. What's going on? And then just sit there with a spreadsheet or a notepad or whatever suits you, a mentor,
yes,
a coach, and work it through. You know, work the process.
Exactly. And here's the reason why is the body doesn't lie. Now, the mind, we deceive ourselves all the time in our mind. You know, we'll tell ourselves that we're better than or worse than or comparing ourselves. We have all these stories and narratives that are just not true based on our past programming and conditioning. But the body doesn't lie. And so when you tune into the body and you start to listen and understand your signals and cues that you're getting in real time, you're getting immediate information that's actually accessible when you start to practice this, when you start to listen. So we have a lot of techniques and methodologies where we help people literally slow down, put away your phone for 5 minutes, maybe even turn it off, heaven forbid, for 5 minutes, get rid of all your outer distractions, and actually tune in and check in to see what is my system telling me, what is my inner guidance system actually telling me about moving to Manhattan or hiring this staff member. Like, even though they have the right resume, why am I getting this weird feeling in my gut? Even though they went to the perfect schools, the best marks, but I just have this feeling that's not going away. What's that about? And how do I include that in the decision making? I'm not saying only go with that, but include that is all I'm saying.
No kidding. I mean, I make decisions based on how I feel about people. I've always done so, and it's actually stood me, in most cases, in very good stead. I'll never get married again. That didn't work there, but, yeah, what can you say? Ain't happening. I'd rather be hit by a beer truck than do that again. Okay, so you think I'm joking. I'm not. Okay, so let's talk. You know, you're talking about processes, so you've got a 6-step process that helps you harness your intuitive intelligence and then pair that with practical business applications. And I think we're still, you know, we just started talking about that. So what is the process?
Yeah, so it's basically a six-step process, like you said, which is really the spine of the book. The book is really how do I access my inner decision maker, if you will, my inner compass. And so it really gives everyone an approachable way to do that. And what really made the book came alive for me was when I started interviewing a lot of other business leaders of how they use their intuition and their decision-making in their companies. And so every chapter starts with the personal story of a business leader around the world who's using their intuition, and or sometimes when they don't listen to it and what happens that way. So I'll rifle through the six steps here, and then we'll get into it a bit. So basically it starts with being receptive, and then the next step is slowing down. And then we have to befriend our inner critic, which I'll get into. The fourth step is in being more embodied and listening to our body. The fifth step is actually asking for guidance. And the last step is then taking action on our new intelligence. So I'll walk through that a little slower now. So the first step is being receptive. The idea is that usually how we're oriented is in achievement mode and hunting mode and, okay, I'm going to get that goal. I'm going to get $10 million in the next few years, or I'm going to become enlightened, or whatever my goal is. You know, we get very outward focused and narrow focused. But with intuition, it's actually about being more receptive, being more in a listening state and being more available throughout the day versus really hunting and doing. It's more about being. And so the idea is when I start to be more receptive in my life, that's where intuition can find me. And the chapter of that book is, you know, you don't find your intuition finds you. It's all the data and the environment around us, but we have to be open to it. And if I have my head in my phone all day and I'm distracted by my gizmos and all the bombardment of media and busyness, then there's no way I'm going to have time to slow down and tune into my signals and cues going on. So the first step is being receptive. It's more of a mindset, if you will. Once I'm more receptive, then I can slow down. And this is what I mean by slow down to go fast. Because when I slow down, I'm going to be receiving the information that's already been there waiting for me about whatever decision I'm chewing on, or just getting a sense of what's going on in this business meeting, why is everybody so tense, and even getting to tune into that reality versus override it and pretend that's not happening. So slowing down is that next step so that I can actually start to track what's going on internally. And then the third step is, now that I've eliminated the outer noise and I've slowed down, I got to deal with the inner noise. And so this is where we have to separate from the inner critic and all the nattering that's going on in our head in the background. And it might be stuff like, hey, what are you doing staring at your navel? We got a deadline here. Let's get back to work. What if grandma calls on the phone? We got to leave that on. And so it's all the little nattering that's happening in the background that's pulling us away from the voice of our intuition. So the whole chapter is dedicated to how do you separate the voice of your inner critic and the one that judges you from the voice of your intuition, your deeper wisdom. And so once you then navigate the inner voices and you learn how to befriend that and not be hijacked by that, then you can go deeper into your body. It's about listening to your body as the next stage on an even deeper level. And how do you listen to your intuitive language? Because everyone gets intuitive messaging in different ways. Some people get sounds, some people get pictures and images, some people get feelings and sensations. I know some people that are in the book that I interviewed that got intuitive downloads in their dreams because that's where the subconscious is most active a lot of times.
All the time, and in the shower.
Shower, steam room. Yep. I get, for some reason, when I'm in the steam room, I'll get insights that I've never had before about my business. Just because your nervous system is relaxed, and you're actually able to go into your subconscious, just that half a step that makes the difference. I have a CEO that drives, and he goes on autopilot in a certain way from his rational mind when he's driving for a long distance, and he'll get his best ideas for his company when he's just out on a long drive. So there's so many ways we can hack our subconscious. So that's really what the fourth step is about, is getting into the body, listening to it, and being more embodied so we can tune in that way. The fifth step is then asking for guidance. How do I ask my question? Like, should we hire this person? Should we move to Florida? Should we take on this client? And you're willing to ask the question and listen and get into conversation with yourself and also key stakeholders as well and train them to do the same thing. And then finally, once we've developed that relationship of asking for guidance, the last step then is taking action. And this is often where the rubber really meets the road is, do I actually take action on this information that I'm getting, or do I hold back? Do I stay in my comfort zone? Do I not rock the boat? And the sad thing is when we don't take action on our intuitive intelligence, what happens is we're not honoring our deeper wisdom. We're not actually making a difference in our environment. And so this is really where we become more empowered from a deeper resource is when we take action from that place. And we're willing to have those conversations. You know, I'm willing to talk to my boss or talk to my colleagues or, you know, whatever difficult conversation or challenging I might need to have, I know that I need to have it. And that's what makes the difference in creating change.
And these are all such critical points. I think we talked about this a bit on our last conversation, but going back to step number three, where you're talking about the inner critic, I think I shared with you before, if I did, stop me now, but mostly when I'm in the shower, it is my thinking place. Bathtub, not so much. I'm reading, I'm talking to the cats. In the shower, I'm captive audience. And I have found that when thoughts or, you know, really great ideas drop into my head, and we all have these internal chats with ourselves. We all do. If anybody says they're not hearing voices, they're lying to you. You're hearing voices. Sometimes you need to listen to them. But I will, you know, ask the questions like, okay, or I will answer it rather, and I'll say, okay, I'm going to do this. Or if I hear myself in my head say, we're going to do this, I have learned to separate those out. Because when I hear myself saying, well, I'm going to do this, that's ego. That's pure ego. Ignore Denise. If I hear, we're going to do this, that's guidance, and I pay attention. Does that make any sense at
all? Exactly. 100%. And so that's really the key here is how do I start to make a distinction between, and I actually have a whole chart in the book about how do you actually start to make a distinction between the voice of your inner critic from the voice of your intuition. Because I'll tell you, and I'm sure everyone can understand, relate to this on the call right now, is that, you know, you don't want to be living your place. You don't want to be living your life from your inner critic. That's not a lot of fun. In fact, that's where self-torture comes from and all the ways that we sabotage ourselves and the ways that we get in the way of our success. And, you know, being a business coach for a long time and consultant, it's people's inner saboteur is the number one thing that stops them from their own success. It's all the ways that we get in our own way that stop us from our greatest achievements and our success and our fulfillment. And so I have a whole chapter dedicated on how do we, you know, not let the inner critic hijack my reality? How do we change that dynamic so that critic is not the one driving the vehicle of self? I'm actually the one making those choices, and that's where self-leadership comes from. So how do we restore our self-leadership and not let that critic and the doubter and the naysayer win out?
Sorry, my microphone just blanked out there for a moment. I guess my answer to that, my response to that would be that you have to recognize, number one, that you are in charge, that you do have this inner critic, who is not your friend, by the way. Yeah, and I recognized that a long time ago. Do I, you know, always get along with my inner critic? No, because I'll say, you're not the boss of me, and then that's kind of the end of the discussion. But sometimes she is the boss of me, and then we have to really have a talk. But what I have found in my life is that you have to sit down and be purposeful, be very, very focused on peeling back all this societal garbage that you've picked up over time. You know, by the time you're 5 or 6 years old, you've been pretty much beat to death by sit down, don't talk, quit running in halls, you know, don't do this, don't do, it's never do this, or honey, that's really great. It's like don't. And I have found, particularly in my life, that that's been one of my biggest bugaboos. And I still don't even listen to my navigation system in my car. She's not the boss of me. So, you know, that had a big kind of a, you know, bad effect on me. It's like, don't tell me what to do. But you do have to tell yourself what to do, don't you? You do have to peel back all the layers and say, you know what, this is not actually true. Why am I tolerating this? Why am I letting this exist in my life? Business, social, personal, whatever.
Yeah, and that curiosity is so important, Denise. And just to offer maybe even a different view of this, even though I get what you're saying about the critic is not your friend, But what is true, and also what I want to say is that what if the critic is actually just trying to protect us? And what if there is a wisdom behind the critic? And so that's where it gets interesting, is trying to understand, why is that showing up right now? Like, why is my critic really loud today?
Okay,
you know,
oh,
it's because I'm doing a presentation this afternoon and I'm scared, or, you know, and I don't want to get humiliated, or, because that's the brilliance here, is that everything is trying to serve a purpose or it wouldn't exist. And so that's a different way of looking at the critic, is, oh, what's the wisdom behind my critic? And how can I start to befriend it so that I'm not having this adversarial relationship internally, because that battle never ends. And that actually is what creates my self-torture in a certain way. And so how do I actually learn how to align with the critic and still lead so it's not the one running the show? But part of it is getting its wisdom. And that helps me understand and have compassion for that part of me, and then not give it so much energy and let it know, like, hey, I hear you, and don't worry, you're not the one doing the presentation, I am. I'm the one that's going to get out there.
I like your explanation so much better than mine. I just learned because I do have an adversarial, you know, kind of relationship with my inner critic. I mean, I will often just say, stop talking. No talking, no talking.
Yeah.
Just leave me alone for a while.
Oh, yeah.
So I like your approach much better.
You know, and Denise, I used to be so hostile with myself, because that's really what it is. It's being hostile with yourself. I mean, I used to say, shut the F up all the time to my critic and get pretty strong. And I thought that was the thing to do in a certain way and just try to tune it out. But if you notice, it never really tunes out. It will come back, right? Or, you know, that's where that whole passive-aggressive dance happens. And so it was through a lot of work, and I studied psychology, I studied a lot of life coaching, and I was a life coach and a therapist at one point. So I got to work with this stuff personally, but also with a lot of people, and just seeing how that inner hostility doesn't ever lead to peace and reconciliation.
So, Rick, is this one of the 5 roadblocks that you're mentioning, that, you know, the roadblocks to accessing your intuitive intelligence? Is that one of them? It sounds like it sure should be.
Well, I have 5 roadblocks, as you mentioned. One of them is doubt. And for me, the inner critic is like doubt on steroids.
Oh, there
you
go.
So, you know, if you take doubt and you go all the way to the extreme, you get your inner critic. So that's the relationship there. But doubt is one of the biggest ways that we sabotage our inner intuition here and our internal wisdom. Because we, a lot of times, know what we need to do. We know the conversation we need to have or the big move in our life that we need to make. But we're scared. And so we start to backpedal and doubt and not trust our deeper feelings and our deeper sensation of what we know is true. And this is really where, you know, are you going to live a life that's really in alignment with your highest purpose and your highest values and what gives you the most fulfillment? Because a lot of times what we really want is outside of our comfort zone of what we know. And it's scary. And so this is important also, that sometimes our intuition is not comfortable. And it's not going to lead us toward a comfortable decision, because it's stretching us to maybe something that we really, really want. And we're afraid to even admit that or own that. And so that's where this gets really alive, because we're literally taking a risk and going for something that's so meaningful for us.
So what do the 5 roadblocks look like?
Yeah, the first one is the main one is the rational mind. It's that rational, linear thinking, and our conscious mind is the number one thing that actually gets in the way of our deeper subconscious and our deeper intuition. And so if I'm always in my thinking mind, I'm not able to slow down and tap into that deeper wisdom that's happening in my body right now. We have neuroreceptors throughout our whole body. So literally, we're taking in information in almost every cell of our body all the time. So if we're not tuning into that, we're limiting, you know, the data that's available for us. So rational mind, doubt that you mentioned and we talked about. Also busyness. When I'm so busy throughout the day and I'm running around from, you know, my phone to my computer to my whatever, I'm not allowing any time for my intuition to find me. Another one is emotion. Emotion can actually take us out of our intuition. What I mean by that is, if I'm flooded by fear, there's no way I'm going to be in a relaxed state that's open, that's receptive, that's actually listening for that deeper messaging that I might be getting. So if I get a strong no about something, is that really my intuition or am I just scared? And also not just fear, like also overexcitement or any strong emotion can hijack my deeper intuitive intelligence. And then lastly, the ego. So if I have a very strong personal agenda and I'm trying to, you know, mash my will, my willpower, like I'm going to make this work. I'm going to keep going to the gym even though my leg is broken and my whole body's falling apart, but I'm going to keep doing the same workout I've been doing for 15 years. You know, like we're willing ourselves to do that even though our body is telling us, hey, this isn't working anymore. Can we change it up? And so the ego can very much get in the way of that deeper listening of what really wants to happen that's not attached to my egoic agenda. So those are the five categories of things that really get in the way of that deeper listening and that deeper wisdom that we all have.
And thank you for sharing this. So what do you do? I mean, I love the idea of, you know, taking these little mini health breaks. I do them all day long. I go out underneath my pecan trees, rain, summer, it doesn't matter. We have two seasons in the South, hot and hotter than hell, but we also have a lot of rain. So I will multiple times during the day kick off my shoes, take my dog outside with me, and go stand underneath this one particular spot. It's a hidden spot behind my pecan trees. And I've got a little seating area back there, and I will dig my toes into the ground, and I will deliberately calm myself, look up into the tree canopy, look at the sky. I'm calling on my intuition. I'm calling on my guides, if you will. I'm not listening to me at all. And I do this many times a day, and it works for me. So what I'm hearing you say is for people to find out, you know, find a way that whether it's a meditation mat, I can't do that. I fall over and drool. I just go to sleep. But, yeah, there are many ways you can just take a break. But if I'm hearing you correctly, Rick, you're saying you have to be intentional about what the break is comprised of. Is that what
exactly.
I'm hearing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I like how you said that. Like, it's really about, you know, find out what works for you. And so I'll give you two broad examples. One is about movement and one is about rest. And so you were basically in some way talking about rest right there where, you know, do I take that time out in nature? You know, do I go for just a really light stroll or just sit down on a rock and look at the vista? Any way that I can take a moment to have a time out and rest my brain, my conscious thinking, and open up that panoramic awareness, you know, in a bigger way. So nature is an amazing outlet for that. That's why Steve Jobs literally used to walk around barefoot from the Apple campus in Cupertino, California, and would slowly walk around, and he'd get all these innovative ideas because he would slow down, get away from the computer of his own facility. You know, this is before he had an iPhone, before he invented the iPhone, so he didn't have a phone to distract him, and he would just walk slowly around campus in the sunlight. And so things like that, find that thing that gives you that autopilot where your brain can relax and you can tap into that deeper space. We also mentioned like hot shower or for some people, a steam room or sauna. Those kind of things can relax our nervous system. So think about what gives you rest. The other side is movement. They've been doing a lot of research on flow states, you know, how we find a flow state where we're in the zone and we operate our best and we feel our best. And so other ways of accessing those places where intuition finds us is in movement, like people who go swimming or on a run or doing some kind of activity where their mind kind of goes on that autopilot, like we talked about earlier, and they can start to access those creative inspirations. And so movement, sometimes even like dance or art, you know, for some people, painting without a destination can really be in that flow state. So that's also a big one that we work with. Another one is play. Sometimes people bring in improv troops into businesses these days because improvisational games actually allow you to think more spontaneously and get out of your typical mindset and access your deeper creativity. So certain areas like that are becoming really popular in the business space also. So play and recreation could be a big one also. So there's so many actual different ways. What's that?
Yeah, a treadmill. I tried, I just I have a monkey brain. It doesn't really slow down, and I'm aware of that. So I've tried, you know, somebody said, oh, meditate while you walk. I have a 55-pound dog. She yanks my shoulder half to death. That's not working. I'm just so busy. I'm just trying not to fall on my face. But I did find purely by accident, because I have a small gym in my home, that if I get on the treadmill, no iPhone, no iPad, no nothing, I'm on the treadmill, the lights are off, and I do fall after a while into a meditative state. So that works
yes.
for me.
Yeah,
that's what you mean by slow movement?
Yeah, exactly. Like, get into a 20-minute practice every day. Whoever's listening, what's 20 minutes that you can literally block out for yourself? And find that thing that gives you that flow state or being in that zone. And that's where our creativity and innovation is waiting for us. And you might even have a loose question that you hold, like, okay, where do we need to take the strategy of the business this next quarter? You know, where do we need to grow into? And you just hold that question lightly, and then you go for that walk, and you even forget the question. And then just see what starts to happen. You'll be amazed as the subconscious mind connects all those dots in the background. That's where you're going to start getting some new ideas.
You know what I also do, Rick, and I've done this for as long as I can remember. When I go to bed at night and I've said my prayers or said me a gratitude, whatever it is that I do, you know, my going to bed process, because sleep does not come easily for me. It's kind of anathema to me. I don't know why. But once I'm in that kind of relaxed state where I know I'm going to drift off in a moment, I will take whatever sticky issue or question, problem, whatever it is, and I will turn it over deliberately out loud to my subconscious for review.
Mm-hmm.
And at 3:18,
yes, exactly.
Every single morning, 3:18, I promise you, I wake up and I've got the answer without fail.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
It's partly
and
training.
That's
I think I trained myself to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, and what's so great is you have found, you know, one of your best, you know, reliable methods of how you can access your deeper wisdom, and that's so great. And what's amazing is this is personal to everyone. Everyone's got their own version of that. And so that's why it's important to start to slow down and listen and practice. And intuition is learnable. It's teachable. You can actually practice this skill, and you're going to get better at decoding your own intuitive language. So I love that you found that way to access that deeper wisdom. And I think everyone on the call here that's listening, I think you have your own version waiting for you if you, you haven't discovered it yet.
Oh, it's definitely out there. You just kind of have to pay attention and say, oh, there it is. So let's go back. I know we had a series of things that we wanted to talk about that we promised the audience. One of them was directional, social, and informational intuition and how you can apply those to the different areas of your business for greater results. I think we've touched on that a bit, but can you kind of offer up a bit more information and summarize it?
Yeah, so when writing this book, one of the things I realized is intuition is multidimensional. It's not just one simple thing. And so the way I got it is, to make it really simple, it's basically the first dimension is between me and me, between me and myself. So it's being able to tune into my own inner radar and my own inner compass and my decision maker, like we're talking about, where I get up at 3:18 in the morning and I've developed that relationship with myself because I've asked a question and I get that response. And so I call that directional intuition, or my nickname for it is the navigator, like really landing into my navigator so I can navigate life's decisions or my business decisions. So it's my navigator in my life. The second dimension is what I call social intuition. So now that I have my inner sense of navigation, it can now extend out to other people. And this is more the interpersonal space. So it's being able to read out people and relationships and situations. This is so great in a business where if you're a salesperson, customer service, a manager, a leader, you're able to read out what's happening with the people involved in your project or your sale. And so I call that the vibe detector. So you have the navigator, the vibe detector, because you're detecting the vibes of the room, and you can actually build that instrument and build that muscle. And then the third one is my whole relationship to the whole environment, my inner sense connected to the whole environment. So we have connected to myself, connected to me and other people, and then me and the whole environment is the third dimension. And I call that informational intuition, and also known as the integrator. So we have the navigator, the vibe detector, and the integrator. And the integrator integrates all the data around us. So these are people who are able to see pattern recognition, They're able to see, you know, if they have large amounts of raw data, they can see the patterns. They can tell you when something's off on a spreadsheet. They have that intuition with numbers and with large amounts of information. And so they're able to detect all of what's happening in the environment and understand the narrative and the story right away. And so all of these are amazingly useful skills in the business. And chances are, if you're listening, there might be one that's a little more natural for you. And yet all of these can be developed. And you might want to also round out your team with the areas where maybe you're not as strong. Like, if I'm not a numbers guy, I want to hire someone who is, so we can make that kind of intelligence into the decision-making as well.
You know, I'm glad you said that. I've been listening to Napoleon Hill, many of his books. And I was listening last night. You know, I tend to listen to him when I'm trying to go to sleep, or listen to a really great audiobook when I'm trying to go to sleep, because if I have the lights on and I'm reading, I'm not going to sleep ever. I'm going to keep on reading. But he was talking this wonderful story about Henry Ford, who had he sued a newspaper for calling him, I can't remember what it was now, but they basically said he was an ignorant pacifist, I believe. And he sued them and said, oh, no, you know, you're not going to call me ignorant. I don't think the word pacifist bothered him. But you don't call me, you know, he had a very limited education. And finally, he just took off on one of the lawyers and said, let me tell you something. And this is in keeping with what you're saying. He said, you're asking me a lot of questions. I don't care who won the Napoleonic Wars. I don't care how many troops the British sent over. What I do know is they didn't get back as many as they sent. But he said, I'm going to tell you what, and I'm paraphrasing wildly here. He said, I have a row of buttons on my desk that allows me to call in anybody on my team or part of my circle who has those answers. And he's talking about, you know. And I went, and there you go. We all do that. We all rely on other people for information we don't have.
Can I share something really exciting about that?
Yes.
Check
Should
this
I open
out.
Up something here? All right.
Oh, check this out. I think people will appreciate this too. We've talked a lot about individual intuition. What the most recent research is starting to point to also is group intuition and how we actually amplify our intelligence in well-working teams that are cohesive. And we're actually smarter together when we're resonating on the same page.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, masterminds.
Masterminding, hive mentality. I mean, the military has been in on this for a long time. They dedicated about $4 million in research on intuitive decision-making with Navy SEAL teams because they know they need to work together so tightly and be on the same page when they're out in battle or when they're on a mission. And so the military gets it. The business world is starting to get it of how important this is. But let me show this really quick experiment that happened not too long ago around jelly beans. So that's right. Imagine you've seen this game where you have a whole jar of jelly beans and you try to guess how many jelly beans are in the jar.
Right.
And here's what they found out, that when individuals tried it, they were pretty off on the number of jelly beans estimating. But when you had at least 10 or more people in the same room trying to estimate individually on a piece of paper, not talking about it with each other, but just trying to tap into that, and the actual average of the 10 people or more would be within a jelly bean or two of the actual number in the jar. So just the idea of everyone collectively putting their attention on something, on a problem or an issue or a challenge, and together in the collective, you're going to have more of that 360 intelligence. So that's where it gets exciting. The more you can start to have teams, this is what we do with real businesses here and teams, is actually facilitate innovation and get everyone on the team on the same page so they can tackle the problem together from a different place.
Exactly. And all of my life I've heard the term collective consciousness. I mean, I don't discount that at all. I mean, I do find that, let me back up a bit. I don't think there are really any new ideas, but I think we're refining ideas as we go, you know, as people, as intelligent people. But I really do depend on, and look, I'm an introvert. I almost never leave my house. If I could have crawfish, you know, delivered to my house, I'd probably sell my car. Seriously, I just don't like to go out. But I'm constantly, deliberately tapping into a collective consciousness, constantly, whether I'm asking for sources or whether I'm asking for guides, where I'm talking with real people, whether I'm depending on my intuition, whether I'm praying and asking for guidance, doesn't matter. I'm constantly tapping into a collection of thought and energy that is far greater than I can ever be. But I know it's out there, so I am constantly nibbling away at the edge.
Exactly. And that's really the whole point, in a way, of this book, is the idea that there's a feedback system going on around us all the time. And are we slowing down enough to plug into that? Because if we're only operating with our local mind and we're not opening up to that vaster subconscious, we're limiting our access to more information and faster information and more well-rounded information. And so that's really the exciting thing about this, is really seeing what is our potential when we start to slow down and tap into that greater resource that's around us all the time.
That's amazing. So we talked about the jelly beans, and you also mentioned in an earlier conversation about the latest findings in neuroscience and techniques to access your intuitive subconscious mind. Is there anything else you want to share? We've only got about 4 more minutes.
Oh, boy, okay. 4 minutes.
I'm telling you, it's past the 60 minutes on the radio.
Yeah, I think, I'll share this, that you know, what they have found, just to really drill home this point, is that the conscious mind, even though it's lovely, and I'm glad I have one, you know, my rational critical thinking, it picks up about 40 bits of information per second. So I can track, you know, maybe the lighting in the room, the temperature, the sound of my voice, the texture of my clothes on my body. There's about 40 bits of data that I can track per second consciously. The subconscious mind is tracking 20 million bits of data per second. So that's 40 bits versus 20 million bits. That's why deepening into our subconscious is so powerful, and where we can access innovation faster when we slow down and get into our subconscious. And so that's really where it goes from like a little two-dirt track of our conscious mind to a 40-lane highway of information with our subconscious. And so that's what's so amazing about what neurobiology is finding out of how we operate and how we can actually access information in a much more integrated, in a much more faster way, when we get our rational thinking out of the way. Now, yes, there's a time and place for the rational mind, for decision making, but they've actually shown in real experiments here, in studies, that in times of uncertainty and times of complexity, it's best to actually bring in our intuitive intelligence. If it's a very simple problem we're facing that's more rule-based or limited, like, you know, if I want you to find me the best flight from Tokyo to Chicago from May 3rd to May 14th, then it's better to use your critical thinking, your rational mind. But if it's more like, okay, is this person actually innocent or guilty in a court of law? That's complex. And then they've actually shown in juries and with judges that when they integrate their intuition, they actually make better decisions that are confirmed later. And so in times of complexity and uncertainty, it's actually better to include our intuition with our decision-making.
See, that makes perfect sense to me. Listen, where can people find both of your books? Because I have them both, and I strongly urge the audience, as I said at the top of the show, to go back and listen to that original conversation that we had, grab the other book, and then, you know, grab this one. So where can people find you, and where can they find the book?
Yeah, you can find our work at invisible-edgellc.com. So Invisible Edge is the name of the company, invisible-edgellc.com. And that's where we're doing all our work of bringing intuitive intelligence and innovation to the business space. And then you can find my book, Decisive Intuition. It's out now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual suspects. And that, once again, is Decisive Intuition.
Wonderful. Do you have any last thoughts before I let you go? I know you need to get back to your book tour.
My last thought is just something I'll say very simply is trust yourself. You know, for all those listening, that's really the whole point of the book, is how do we give ourselves more permission to trust ourselves, and that we actually have more wisdom than we often give ourselves credit for. And so by slowing down and including that, we actually make better decisions that are more fulfilling and more in alignment with our highest purpose.
Okay, Rick, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, and I really hope that people will listen to both podcasts and grab your book and, you know, hire you as a coach if needed, whatever they need. I love chatting with you. I always have the best time with the conversations with you, so thank you.
And we didn't even mention shrimp gumbo yet.
I know. Well, listen, before we say goodbye, I would like to, I know, huh? Before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Let me see if this will play here.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.